Good morning, everyone. This is the third hour of First Up. I'm Matt Because, in for Aaron Karolnick. A reminder that later on today, Raptors beat at 10 a.m. with Nikki Reyes and Josh Lewenberg. And Josh, our Raptors reporter, will join us just after 9:10 this morning. And then the Raptors, man, it's like four games in 5 days. They take on the Bulls tonight. Then they got the Hawks tomorrow, a game you can listen to right here on TSN 1050, 7 o'clock pregame, 7:30 tip-off. How tough is this for the body, Carlo? Like, I was going to ask you just, with all the minutes these players are playing, for yourself, when you were at the heaviest usage you ever had, how did that feel the next morning, and how much of a difference could you feel if it was like, say, a stretch where you're playing 13 minutes versus a stretch where you're playing 20 minutes?
Well, there's a couple ways to answer that. One, hockey is a way more demanding sport than the NBA because, it's more of a physical game. And the NBA, you could be running, and but if you train yourself to to learn how to handle those high endurance games, there's a good chance you could recover really quickly. But a lot of it has to do with what type of minutes those are.
Yeah.
Right? If you're playing hard minutes where you feel like you're on your heels a lot and you're playing physical stuff, you probably need a full day to recover. But if those minutes are, positive minutes where they're enlightening, there was one time I played a game in New Jersey. I think it was my career high. I played like 29 minutes and I came off the ice at the end of the game. And actually the coach came up to me the next day and he's like, "Hey, how you feeling today?" I was like, "Feel great." Mm-hmm. He's like, "Well, you realize you played 29 minutes last night." I was like, "Really? It didn't feel like 29 minutes." And a lot of it was because I spent in the offensive zone, or at least not as much time in the D zone, where, you're exerting a different type of energy. So, for the Raptors, this is concerning to me, the amount of minutes these guys are playing and, where they are in their schedule, because you watch this Raptors team play and it's the fight in their game that you really start to appreciate. And I'm not saying like fight, like fist fight. It's the energy they play with defensively. It's the adversity that they push themselves through coming back from deficits. Those are all hard minutes that they're playing.
And a specific point there? Sorry to interrupt. Specific point about what you're saying, but fight? The win the other night against the Miami Heat, Pascal Siakam has played more minutes than anyone else. He's guarding Bam Adebayo, the big, big man who's an all-star for the Miami Heat. So, and that was late in the game, to your point.
Yeah, so it's the quality of minutes that you're getting measured against the quantity of minutes that you're playing. And, I'm no sports science guy. I'm not Alex McKechnie or anything like that. But I've been saying this for the last 2 weeks when the starters on the Raptors have just been playing an exuberant and enormous amount of minutes. And now you factor that in with their schedule, where they're playing in the middle of playing four games in 5 nights, and they just came off of playing three games in 4 nights. Look, I don't know about you. You're a marathon runner. You're a guy that runs, more often than I do. How long does it take you to recover from running the miles that you run, on a weekly basis?
A lot more now than when I was in my early 30s. But it definitely, it takes a while. You got to stretch more. You got to do all these things you didn't have to do a decade ago. As for the game tonight, this is a great test because the Bulls are healthy, 32-18, first in the Central. Right. And their last game a couple days ago, where they beat the Magic, DeRozan, Vucevic, LaVine, all played. All played 35 or more minutes. All put up good numbers. So it's a great test. And then for the Raptors, Gary Trent Jr. Like, this is coming out of nowhere. Like, he had one 30-point game in his career coming into this year. He said five in a row. And if you remember, at the start of the year, he was known more for his defense. He was really upping his game on that end of things. And if he gets 30 points, he breaks DeMar DeRozan's record of five straight games with 30 that DeRozan did a bunch of years ago to start the year. But it's just one thing no one could have seen coming. No one could have seen this from Gary Trent Jr. And it's part of the reason why Toronto is 11-6 in 2022.
Yeah, it's a big reason why. And the irony behind the matchup tonight, you wonder if DeMar DeRozan is actually going to ask to guard Gary Trent.
Oh,
because,
a good point.
Yeah, he obviously sits there and recognizes that he holds the record as a Raptor of the most games now tied with Gary Trent Jr. at 5. And he's thinking, I'm not going to let this guy break my record. I'm not going to let him get 30 again tonight. So that to me, the irony, the fact that he has a chance to break that record playing against the guy he holds it with, is a pretty cool storyline for this matchup.
Yep. Oh yeah, it is. I would, man, because like DeRozan's never been known as a lockdown defender.
No,
I would love
never.
If there's like a minute left, and Trent's got 29, and suddenly like DeRozan is part Kawhi, part Dennis Rodman, you know, just like right up on him, picking him up at half court. I would love to see that. And for Toronto, this again, it's 3 games in 4 nights. And as for the minutes, the weird thing about the minutes is Nick Nurse is playing guys as it like that they're going all in on a playoff run.
Right.
Last year, Masai Ujiri was like, nope, this is a tank season. You know, certainly late in the year. And you can understand why, playing in Tampa and everything. And, hey, that got them Scotty Barnes. I wonder, you know, Masai Ujiri, how he feels about these minutes. And also, Dave Feshchuk, I think it's said on your program and on mine, that the way the Raptors measure it, it's not just about the number of minutes. It's as you said, how those minutes are deployed and what the exertion is on the player. So I know we can't just look at the raw minutes, but it's hard not to when, right. You know, like Siakam and Van Vliet averaged more than 40 minutes per game this month. The only other player to do that this season, Kevin Durant in December. Before that, the last time a player averaged 40 minutes per game for an entire month was James Harden, and that was back in 2015. So it's super high usage we're seeing right now.
It really is. But the confusing thing for me, Matthew, looking at this matchup, is, you know, again, they just came off of playing 3 games in 4 nights. Winners of 3 in a row, and 2 of those games were against the conference-leading Miami Heat. Impressive wins. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't really give them much chance to win that last game against the Heat 2 nights ago, because 3rd game in 4 nights, you know, Miami probably still sour from the triple overtime loss over the weekend. And it just seemed like a tough spot for the Raptors to be in.
It was.
But what I've learned after last night's game is never count this team out. Like you can never, you know, you can never look at this team and say, yeah, no, they got too much going against them. Because it almost seems like that's what they pride themselves in. That's what they motivate themselves. When their backs are against the wall, they find a way to play their best. And I think it was said earlier on in the year, the blessing and the curse of this team is when they play their best, they can play with anybody in the league.
Yes.
But it almost seems like when they're not playing the best teams in the league, they play down to competition. And that's just a learning experience. You know, with a younger team, a team that's still learning how to play with each other, that just goes through and tries to build that chemistry. But the surprising thing to me, like you just mentioned, all the players that the Chicago Bulls have back in their lineup, they have a full squad.
Full squad.
Did you see the line for today's game?
I haven't checked it. I haven't checked it yet. What's
the Raptors are favored by 3.5.
That seems weird.
Right. What am I missing here?
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, I know the Bulls have had, you know, I'm sure they've had a heavy schedule as well. But, you know, again, it's the Raptors, 3 games, 4 nights. And I'm looking, it's in Toronto. And that's the weird thing there is there's no home court advantage.
No, I know there's like, zero fans. I know
there was a couple hundred fans that were sparsely, like literally a couple hundred. And it was Drake hanging out with Masai Ujiri. I would take Chicago. You know, I would like, if you're giving me 3.5, I would take Chicago, unless like they're going to hold out a Zach LaVine or something like that. You're right. I would take, and it's nothing against the Raptors. This is, the Bulls are talented. The Bulls are healthy. And I don't believe in home court advantage when it comes to the Raptors, when you don't have anyone in the barn.
See, I fell for that same trick when, when the Raptors hosted the Charlotte Hornets 2 weeks ago with no Van Vliet, no Scottie Barnes. They came out and they had their best offensive output, beating the Charlotte Hornets, who were winners of five in a row on the road. Same thing on the weekend. You know, in Miami, their backs up against the wall, playing the best team in the league. I know no Kyle Lowry, but Miami, one of the better home teams in the league.
Yes.
They find a way to win that game. They go into Atlanta, one of the hottest teams in the league at that point. I know no Trae Young. They find a way to win that game. It just seems like every time you doubt this team and you count them out, they find a way to get a win. And before looking at this line, everything you told me about the Bulls and where they are in their schedule and stuff, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a tough one for the Raptors. But why are they favored?
What does
Vegas know about this game that we don't know?
It feels like it should be a pick 'em. I think the Raptors, obviously the Raptors can win, but I'll take that nice security blanket of those 3.5. On the other side, it is the Leafs at the All-Star break, and Arad threw this out there that we will talk about something we like about the team, something we don't like, and something that we would like to see more of / improved. So we will do that on the other side. That's Cole Iacovo. I'm Kaz. You're listening to First Up right here on TSN 1050. Time now for traffic. What I want, you got, might be. This is a song you hear often, certainly a ton, after the Leafs lose 6-3 to the Rangers, and after that they've been dummying opponents, and yes, some weaker opponents, but they are running them out of the barn. It is the Leafs off until Monday. This is First Up. I'm Matt Koss. That's Carlo Cogliacomo. Carlo, we had a homework assignment from our producer, Arad. Our three questions about Leafs at the midway point. Are you ready?
I am, buddy.
All right.
Very ready.
First question, something you like? The answer I gave, special teams. First in the NHL, power play hitting at over 30%. Third in the NHL, penalty kill at just over 84%. So in the category, something that I like, I'm going to go with the special teams.
That's a great one, Matt. The special teams are a big reason why they are as successful as they are at the moment. I mean, let's remind people, they are on pace right now to record, I believe it's 118 points, franchise record best, if they continue on this pace. I don't necessarily think they will. Just because I believe the schedule will play a factor, and that's to nobody's fault. It's just the games that they have to make up. And, life will probably, come back at them. But if they can do it, it will put an icing on the cake on the year they've had so far. The things that I like the most so far is coming into the season, there was a huge spotlight put on the four players that Cal Dubas has doubled down on as the core group of guys that's going to lead this team. And they've continued to do it. They've been their best players night in and night out. And you can include Morgan Rielly on that list. You got Matthews leading the team in goals and in points. You got William Nylander, on pace to have a career year. He's got 17 goals along with John Tavares with 17 goals, both at 40 points. Morgan Riley's on pace to have a career year with 38 points in 42 games. And we've all seen how hot Mitch Marner is right now, since coming back from his injury. And so those guys are doing exactly what they've been expected to do. And you complement that with the play they've gotten in net. That's what I've liked the most about this Maple Leafs team.
Oh, yeah. Marner is Hansel right now from Zoolander. He's so hot right now. Something that I don't like, and this stat was from a couple days ago, but Austin Matthews, how is there 500 players who have drawn more penalties at even strength than Matthews? And I know he drew one recently, so that number might be a little bit different. It shocks me that as big, fast, strong, and talented as he is, and almost no penalties drawn. So that is something that I don't like.
Wow. Nice for you to be digging in, doing some homework there.
That's what I do, baby.
Okay, so I've got a couple things that I don't like.
Yeah.
I'll point out the obvious. I don't like the signing. I never liked the signing of Nick Ritchie. I think the Maple Leafs, have a very questionable task, a tall task here on what to do with Nick Ritchie, because they're so close up to the cap, and clearly his signing is not meeting the expectation that was brought in for him. And what does that do for how they operate through the trade deadline? I guess it'll be remain to be seen, but he falls in the don't like category because he just hasn't found a fit, even though he's been given every opportunity to find a fit with this team. I don't like the lack of depth on this team, both at forward and especially on defense, because if the Maple Leafs are serious about being a playoff team, they've been pretty good at getting depth scoring up front, but they've been very thin on defense with their depth. And clearly, you know, when guys like Muzzin and Hall were out of the lineup, we saw how quickly that got exposed. Now, there's still time to address that. They've done a good job at least, treading water up until this point, but clearly an area of concern for me if they're serious about having playoff success. And this is an obvious. I don't like the fact that we're continuing to watch Maple Leaf games with no fans in the stands.
Hold that thought. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Spoiler that's going to come up in one moment. But let's okay. go. Like, how much of this, when we talk about depth, how much of it is not enough personnel, and how much is this being exposed because not only of just the regression of Muzzin and Hall, but also Travis Dermott, where we thought, okay, this guy's got a chance to keep building. You know, he has over 200, 240, 250 NHL games. And early on, it looked like he was going to become a legit top four guy. And it just hasn't been the case this year.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one, Matt. I mean, it's still too early to, give you a direct answer on that.
Yeah.
But, at least for the most part, you've got to be happy with, the bargain signings that the Maple Leafs.
Oh, I love the bargain signings. Listen, Kampf and Bunting especially, and you can go up and down, and there's tons of great ones. And by the way, I think Pierre Engvall, he's got he's on a nice run here, and he's been able to score on the fourth line. When we talk about the issues with the Leafs on depth defensively, how much of it's them not having enough personnel, and how much of it is we're worried about depth because Travis Dermott hasn't ascended the way we thought he was going to.
No, for sure. That's an obvious concern. And I think the approach the Maple Leafs took this year was, all right, we have to see what we have in Sandin and Liljegren. This has to be the year they show us if they can be NHL players. And they've been able to do that while still allowing Travis Dermott to showcase himself too. And I think the expansion draft showed us a lot about how this Maple Leafs felt about their defense when they decided to protect the top four or the top two pairs with Riley, Brody, Muzzin, and Hall. And they said, okay, well, that's how we're going to find out about our depth, or at least explore our depth, is we're going to give it to the young guys and see what they can do with it. Well, clearly, I think they've done a pretty good job up until this point. I'm not going to sit here and criticize them. Is there room for improvement with certain guys? Absolutely. But the value of having a guy that's played 300, 400, 500 games in the NHL back there as well as extra added depth is something that they don't have. I mean, just look at their players. You're going to trust a guy like Biega? I mean, as much as I hate to say his name, but Martin Marincin was that guy for the Maple Leafs, and we're all thankful he's not here anymore. But there's guys out there that you can find that have that experience and have that type of mileage.
A Bogosian type.
Right. That can come in and fit the role of a depth guy who is comfortable or at least satisfied with being an in and out of the lineup guy for this team. They did it last year when they went out and acquired Hutton. Yep. I expect them to do the same thing this year when, find those value guys somewhere.
Ah, shout out to Marty Marincin, who's now taking strays and didn't even realize it. Okay, something you want to see more of. On the hockey side, you know what I want to see? I want to see boring minutes with Muzzin and Hall, where they're out there and the game looks boring. Mm-hmm. Because they're doing their job and they're just creating low-event hockey with the opposing forwards. The other thing I want to see, I want fans. I don't want 500 fans. I don't want a smattering of fans, a scattering of fans, a dusting of fans. I want to see that place filled. And yes, I know the Platinum Seat people, they're not as loud as they should be. I don't care. You want it, it's such a disadvantage for these Canadian teams.
It's optics.
Yeah. And the Canadian teams, both in the NHL and also the Raptors, yes, I want fans.
I'm going to second that. I think that's number one on my list, as I shared it with the things that I don't like. Fans back in the stands. Even if it's not full capacity, you know, and that's not exactly what I'm here preaching. But you can't tell me, you can't convince me or anybody else that there's not a safe way to put 50% capacity in that building.
Yes.
Considering the protocols we've learned how to live with. Mm-hmm. So find a way to make it happen, and let's not wait till February 21st to do it.
Yeah.
The Maple Leafs are about to encounter a bunch of home games. Let's allow this team to at least celebrate the fact that they've had a good season and let their fans enjoy it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw Winnipeg. Winnipeg's accelerating their fans back into the stands. February 8th, they're going to 50% capacity. Don't know what Montreal is doing, but who cares what they're doing? Let's focus on Toronto. Find a way to make it happen. The other thing I'd like to see improve, Matt, obviously we touched on the depth on defense. It's no secret. That's one thing that you want to see get a chance to be improved. But, you know, you got guys like Bunting and Kampf and Mikheyev and Kasha. These guys have done a great job contributing offensively, but they've also done a great job drawing penalties.
Yes.
And you mentioned
Bunting is like tied with like McDavid.
Right. And you mentioned about how impressive this power play has been this year and, you know, how they're operating and how they're a big part of the success. I want to see this Maple Leafs play a brand of hockey where they draw more penalties so that they allow their power play guys to at least dictate how the game is going to go, mm-hmm. especially with how good they're operating on it.
100%. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it is remarkable. And I know that Toronto, there's only like four or five teams that have drawn fewer penalties than the Maple Leafs. And just the Austin Matthews stat always just kind of blew me away that he hasn't found a way to draw more penalties, just considering just who he is as a player. The guy might win the Rocket Richard.
You know what else I want to see happen?
What?
I want to see one of these Maple Leafs player win an NHL award this year.
Yeah.
Again. I mean, we saw Matthews win the Rocket, and yes, okay, that's a stat where you're leading a category in points or in goals, whatever it may be. I want to see a Maple Leaf win a trophy based on their play. Is it a Vezina? Is it the Norris? Is it the Hart? Is it the Selke? Whatever. Is it the Jennings Award for tandem goal? Whatever it is. Because it'll help captivate the year that the season that the Maple Leafs are about
to have. That's a big ask. That is a big, like, first off, the Norris, I mean, between Makar and Fox and Victor Hedman.
It's not happening.
We'll move that to the side. Vezina, I mean, Jack Campbell showed in November and December he can play at a Vezina level. But damn, you got Vasilevsky and Shesterkin. But I mean, that one certainly has a bit of a chance. You know, the Rocket Richard, obviously the most likely one. So I think, you know, but yeah.
Well, the Hart. Can Matthews put himself in the conversation to win the Hart?
Yeah, he can. Yeah, right? I absolutely. Because
the Ted Lindsay, mm-hmm. which is voted by the players, which McDavid usually wins every year. I mean, I don't know. There's got to be something out there that.
How about the Lady Bing?
Players.
How about the
Lady Bing?
Lady Bing. Wait a minute. What about Nick Ritchie from the Lady Bing? He never plays, so he doesn't get any penalty minutes. So maybe Nick Ritchie for the Lady Bing.
Or hey, Rookie of the Year. Michael Bunting is a Rookie of the Year candidate.
Yeah.
Right.
I got to tell you, I got a rule on this. If you can legally rent a car in the United States, you can't win Rookie of the Year. Okay? Like how old is Bunting? Isn't he like 25, 26?
You're wrong about that, Matthew, because the reason why you're wrong about that, and it's a good example for all young hockey players, is all young hockey players don't necessarily take the same path to get to the NHL. So it shouldn't matter how old you are. It should matter about, you know, how you're playing in your first season in the league.
No, I disagree. Some guys take 5 years old.
Some guys take longer to develop, and some guys have to grind it out in different leagues before they actually get their chance. And Michael Bunting's a nice example of that.
Bunting's been great. It's been a great signing. Like, both these things are true. He's been a wonderful player, and what a great ascension from him, where it looked like he was going to start the year on the fourth line as they were giving Nick Ritchie a chance. And now Bunting's like, no, I'm on the top line. I'm not going anywhere. Right. But for me, aesthetically, that rookie, the rookie of the year, I need a fresh-faced, young-looking thing. I cannot have it being someone 25 years old. All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, one of the best in the business covering football, Aaron Schatz from Football Outsider. We'll ask him, Jimmy Garoppolo, does it make sense for another team to go after a guy like this? What do the numbers say? Plus, we'll start doing a little Super Bowl talk. That is coming up in just a moment. You are listening. First up right here on TSN 1050. Time now for a Newstalk 1010 traffic update. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back. This is First Up. I'm Matthew Cause, in for Aaron Karolnik. That's Carlo Koliakovo. And joining us now, I always love when he gets to join me on gameplay from Football Outsiders. Go to footballoutsiders.com to check out the incredible work done by the entire team, including their editor-in-chief. It is Aaron Schatz. Aaron, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. So before we talk about why you don't blitz these quarterbacks or how you won your over bet for Jimmy G passing yards in the NFC Championship game, when you look back at the career of Tom Brady and through the DVOA numbers that you guys that you created and specialize in, historically, was there anyone better than Brady?
It depends on how you measure it, because so when Bill James, the baseball analyst, wrote his historical baseball abstract, he did his best of players lists in two ways. He did best peak value and best career value. And so if you're looking at career value, I don't think anybody comes close to Brady because of what he did in his late 30s and 40s. I mean, no quarterback had ever played like that in his 40s. And then Brady is, you know, topping the league in stats and winning Super Bowls and all kinds of crazy things. If you look at peak value, so how good they were in like their top 3 or 4 years,
yeah,
I think an argument can be made that Peyton Manning was better. And you maybe could even make an argument for Patrick Mahomes. But if you look at career value, like how long Brady played and how good he was for so long, nobody comes close.
It's crazy. And now, though, George Blanda gets to have the record for the most passing yards by a quarterback 45 or older. So, Brady, you got to come back. You got to eventually beat George Blanda. Heaven forbid I don't do a football interview without, you know, mentioning a guy from 50 years ago. So for the Super Bowl, how much of an upset is it, Aaron, that the Bengals are still playing? Like, I don't know where they ended the year in DVOA and how it changed in the playoffs, but how much of an upset is it that we'll see Joe Burrow in a week and a half?
Oh, it's a heck of an upset. Cincinnati ended up 17th in DVOA. If they win the Super Bowl, they will have the lowest DVOA of any Super Bowl champion.
Sorry, before you further on, what does DVOA stand for?
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to not talk.
Defense Adjusted Value Over Average, and it is our main stat at Football Outsiders.
Okay.
We measure the success of every play based on the down and distance, compare it to a league average baseline, and then we adjust based on the situation and the opponent.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So the Bengals are they finish here 17th, and if they win the Super Bowl, what does that mean historically?
I mean, they will be the lowest. DVOA goes back to 1983, and the Bengals will have the lowest DVOA of any Super Bowl champion. We have estimated numbers that go back before that, and they would not be lower than the 1970 Baltimore Colts. But basically, based on the regular season, this is one of the weakest teams to ever make the Super Bowl. But they made it, right? Yeah. I mean, we can talk about their regular season all we want, but they won the three games that they needed to win to get there. It shows that there is randomness and surprises and upsets in professional sports. If the best team always won, it wouldn't be as fun.
Right.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. So would you say that the Rams are on the higher part of your list for DVOA?
Yes, the Rams finished the year fifth. So, you know, they
I thought you were going to expand.
sorry.
For the Rams, what do they do the best? And on the other end, what is the Rams' biggest weakness?
Right now, the Rams are strongest, I would say, probably stopping the run. But their passing game is also huge. Their weakness is their running game. Their running game has been really poor in the playoffs. Like, I realize it's a great story that Cam Akers came back from his Achilles injury, but he hasn't actually been very good.
If you're the Bengals, and you're right, and we saw the fumbles against Tampa Bay, and it's more of a human interest story than an actual football story that Cam Akers will be playing in the Super Bowl. I think you were tweeting out about this, but for the Bengals, as you mentioned, this would be an upset if they win the Super Bowl, and it's nothing against them and just the rise of Joe Burrow. But what does the roadmap look like for the Cincinnati Bengals to defeat the Rams next weekend?
I mean, their defense has been very mediocre this year. It has played better in the postseason. The coverage has to be strong. Their pass rush is not very good. I realize they had a lot of sacks in the playoffs, but most of those were coverage sacks. And I think that their pass rush gets a little bit more hype than it really deserves. Their coverage has been strong in the playoffs, though. Their safeties are really good. And Awuzie, one of the cornerbacks, is really good.
Yeah.
And on offense, they need to get the ball out fast. Their offensive line is garbage. And the Rams are going to destroy it. And the thing is, if Burrow gets the ball out very quick, then it will neutralize the fact that his offensive line is so bad. And they'll probably go empty backfield a lot so that he's got five receivers and can pick where he wants to go with the ball before the ball is even snapped. But the Rams actually had really good defense against empty sets this year.
By the way, what I love, we're joined by Aaron Schatz, who did, and you can check it out at footballoutsiders.com. The DVOA is a great way of just looking at who the best and worst teams are because it just takes so much into account. But I love what you just said there about the Bengals' offensive line, is that it is a mess. It is garbage. You don't need DVOA. All you got to do is watch the games. And you're right. A lot of this is going to be about Burrow just getting the ball out. Where is Burrow now versus the beginning of the year? Like, what do the numbers say about him? Because I remember early he had that game against the Bears where he threw three straight interceptions. Now he's a guy where people, you know, are making some pretty high claims or comparisons. Where is Burrow now than at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, I think the claims are a little out of sorts. The fact that the team made it to the Super Bowl are leading for people to claim that Burrow is better than he really is. There are a lot of really big positive plays coming from Burrow, a lot of stuff downfield, but also a lot of negatives, interceptions, and especially sacks. And that offensive line is garbage, but Burrow also takes too many sacks. Like, he runs backwards too far. You know, he takes too many yards on his sacks. His pocket presence isn't that great. The scrambles that he had against Kansas City, where he scrambled on a third and long to convert for new first downs, he didn't do that much during the regular season. That was very sort of out of the norm for him, and I don't think you can expect him to do that again.
Well, yeah, and especially that he got free from Chris Jones, you know, in that one play to keep that drive.
Yeah, hop over him.
Yeah, like that one there was absolutely remarkable. Hey, Aaron, getting off the Super Bowl for a moment. Last time you were on with me, you were saying take the over passing yards for Jimmy Garoppolo in the NFC Championship game, and you were right, and you actually convinced me. I was all over the under. Then you scared me, so then I went on the over. We know that he's going to be traded. To me, Jimmy Garoppolo feels like better-looking Andy Dalton in terms of just production. would a team be right going after him, or is it kind of a buyer beware where he'll raise your ceiling or he'll raise your floor, but he not necessarily will raise your ceiling?
I think it depends on what you have around him. I mean, listen, we know that Jimmy Garoppolo can take a team to the Super Bowl because he has actually done it. So if you've got a great defense and good receivers and offensive line and everything around him, he absolutely can take you all the way. But, you know, there's quarterbacks who you win because of, and there's quarterbacks that you win with. And Garoppolo is much more of a win with. And unless you have all the other parts, you're probably dooming yourself to year after year of wild card contention. The same way Minnesota is with Kirk Cousins.
Well, speaking of Minnesota and Kirk Cousins, John Harbaugh was rumored to be the coach over there, which he notified Michigan that he's coming back next year. But
so weird.
What do you do in Minnesota with that situation there? I mean, if you're a coach, are you looking for a defensive coach? Are you looking for an offensive coach? Because, you know, depending on what happens with Aaron Rodgers, Minnesota could be the team that could be, you know, taking over that division if Aaron Rodgers leaves with that offense.
Yeah, but taking over that division at 10-7, maybe. I mean, there is a reasonable argument in Minnesota for blowing it up and starting over.
Wow.
That, you know, they're a very mediocre, you know, they're like, DVOA said they were a little bit better than their record this year, but it's like they can't get into the top 10. Like every year they're like the 12th best team. I mean, do you want to just be the 12th best team every year in perpetuity and hope that you luck, you know, into some kind of playoff run? You could go for that. But I think what you want to do is really build a championship contender. And in order to build a championship contender, they've got to break it down and start it over.
As a Giants fan, a little bit of being 12th overall would not be the worst thing in the world. Aaron, last question for me, and just going back, I know it's the Super Bowl is not still over a week, but obviously you guys at Football Outsiders are pouring in the numbers. I imagine you guys are leaning Rams. Is there anything out of the ordinary we should keep an eye on for this for the Super Bowl?
I haven't really gone through all the prop bets yet, so I don't have any like prop bet suggestions, but I'm definitely leaning Rams. I have a lot of respect for what the Bengals have done, and upsets are certainly possible. We have the Rams winning 2/3 of the time, which is about equal with what Vegas lines have. So it's not like there's a lot of value in picking the Rams because we have the line about the same as Vegas, but they're clear favorites in this game. Mm-hmm.
So you haven't gone through the numbers about who are we going to see on the broadcast first during the national anthem? Is it going to be Matt Stafford or Joe Burrow?
We actually have a whole article up with those fun prop bets right now if you go to footballoutsiders.com. But we didn't do a lot of the broadcast prop bets. We did a lot of the cross-sport prop bets, like will there be more touchdowns in the Super Bowl or goals in NHL games on the same day?
That kind of prop.
Wow.
That is fun. It's great. I love it. I love the cross sport. The cross sport prop bets are way better than the color of the Gatorade. That was a horrible. It's the most overrated of all the bets.
We picked the color of the Gatorade bet too, though. This is our 19th year of doing our Super Bowl prop bet extravaganza. We were the first site to ever really do the prop bet thing back in 2003, and we've been doing it ever since every year.
I guess wow, and no. what's your percentage on the Gatorade bet?
I have no idea.
So there's no DVOA.
75% would have been the answer to that trick.
Gatorade. Yeah, there's no DVOA for Gatorade.
So we don't know if the orange Gatorade is better at pass protection than the blue Gatorade.
No, apparently Tom Brady favors the blue, but without Tom Brady in the game, you don't know what color it's going to be.
Interesting. Interesting.
Aaron, really appreciate it. People, seriously, go check it out. FootballOutsiders.com. It is a great site. Go sign up for it. It'll make you smarter. It'll make you a better better as well. Aaron, thanks so much for joining the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Take care. That is Aaron Schatz from footballoutsiders.com. How much have you ever dipped your toes, Carlo, in some of the crazy, like there's always, if LeBron is playing, there'll always be one. Will there be more total points scored versus LeBron points, rebounds, and assists? Like, those bets are always out there.
Yeah, no, I'm not. When you get yourself involved in those kind of like mixed sports bet, you're not really paying attention to the game. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even just listening to AK and him mentioning me about all this crazy prop bets that he bets, it's like, how do you enjoy the game when you're thinking about so many things that need to happen within the game?
I know.
It's crazy. Like, and I know that there's a huge market out there for it. I mean, props has become a huge avenue, or at least a huge space that people like to gamble on. It gives them a different way to enjoy the game. And I'm not saying that it's bad or not. I'm all for it, but it's just, for me, it's tough to really dive into that. Look, the Super Bowl is always a fun thing for me, at least in the past, to bet on. And I would always, my go-to was always bet the coin toss and then pick a winner in the game. That's how you enjoy. And 2 years ago when we were at Landsberg's Super Bowl party, I believe you were there, where me and AK were doing like fun little prop bets on every drive or every play or every offensive possession. And so that became fun because it was between buddies and it gave you, you know, a chance to sort of, you know, create a little bit more excitement in the game. But all the things that they have available, it's too much. It's way too much.
By the way, smart play by you doing the coin flip, because then you can focus on the game. You're doing the coin flip. So good for you.
You get a 50-50 chance to win.
Yes. Yeah, coin flip, good for you. Bad for you for going, oh, yeah, weren't you there? No, I've never gone to Landsberg Super Bowl party. I've done the same Super Bowl party every year with my friends. And shame on you for not remembering. I was not at that party. If I was, you would have remembered, because I would have been at Michael's. So then there would have been a lot of overindulgence on both the food.
I couldn't remember who was the one who complained about the dry burgers, if it was you or 20 Fingers. So.
About the dry burgers? Was that 20 Fingers? Oh, my God.
Dude, these things were like 2-3 inches thick.
Yeah.
A patty. And, like, literally, they weren't even cooked all the way through. It was, like, you know, medium rare was the style of burger. And 20 Fingers was complaining that they were too dry.
I've been to Landsberg's many times. The one thing I've never done is
complain. But, yeah, the feast that he puts on, especially with the... the salami too. It's
so good. I know we got to go to break in a second, but I'm sure you're with me on this, Carlo. And I've been saying this for years. Why is the Super Bowl not on a Saturday? You know, especially like I've done the morning show many times after a Super Bowl, and I'm sitting there in the fourth quarter and I'm looking at the clock and you get the meat sweats. And, like, Super Bowl should be on a Saturday, so you've got the Sunday to recover.
Or they should just make it a holiday Monday.
Yeah, we'd still be working. That doesn't help us. We would be
Arad
working.
Was saying, Arad, get on the mic. I thought you were saying that February 14th this year is Family Day, is it not?
No, February 21st is Family Day.
Oh, okay. It's
what I was talking about was City of Cincinnati declared all the schools closed.
Gotcha. That's what you were talking about.
Okay, hold on.
The city of Cincinnati. Yes.
Wait. Yeah, no, Arad, jump. What are you eating right now? Because you were sitting there shoving food in your mouth, and then you must have been terrified when Carlo said, hey, Arad, jump on
the
mic.
Get on the mic.
What are you eating?
I have this bread that looks like it's about to go bad, so I have to put it to good use. It's a pastrami, salami, mayo, hot pickle sandwich.
Oh my God. That's
very European.
That is.
Yes.
It's very European. It's also very whatever I have in my fridge.
It also needs to be mentioned. You know, now let's just peel back the curtain for a second here. During one of the commercial breaks, Arad asked, I've got a crab and lobster salad that I've had since Saturday. Can I eat it? And the answer is no. Shellfish is delicious. Lobster and crab is delicious, but this is not like pizza. There is a very short shelf life when it comes to fish. Throw that out, Arad.
Yes, unless it's like a shrimp ring, that could stay refrigerated.
Yeah.
You just you can't trust any other fish to stay in the fridge for more than a day or two.
Carlo, to that point, who leaves leftover shrimp?
Well, you're right.
I had a shrimp ring the other day. Me and one friend crushed it by the fire. It was delightful. Who leaves shrimp? I've never been in my house, never been before in bed. Oh, there's shrimp here. Why wasn't it eaten? It'll get eaten.
Well, you're absolutely right about that, man. If you have a shrimp ring more in the fridge for more than a day, shame on you.
Thank you. Exactly.
You shouldn't be owning a shrimp ring if that's what you're going to do with it.
100%.
I'm with you on that.
All right. Josh Lewenberg, Raptors reporter, is going to join us next. Carlo, I think we start by asking him the question you did. It's no offense to the Raptors, but why are they a 3.5-point favorite when there's no real home court advantage because there's no fans there and the Bulls are fully healthy? They were fully healthy in their win a couple days ago against Orlando. This is like the third game in four nights. What's going on? So I know it seems like a betting question, but it's really more of a preview question as I see Arad finishing that aggressive sandwich. We will get it. Josh Lewenberg joins us next right here on First Up, but now traffic.